You're listening to the Whale Scout Podcast with your host, Whitney Negebauer.
Welcome to the Whale Scout Podcast, everybody. My name is Whitney Negebauer, and today is Monday, August 20th. Today on the podcast, we will be joined by Dr. Hendrik Nolens, who is a veterinarian at SeaWorld, who is on the team helping to help J50, or Scarlet, who is looking to be in very poor condition. Before we dive into that topic, I wanted to give an update on J35, Telequa, who, since we last spoke, has now released her calf. So this unprecedented display of grief is what everyone is calling it, lasted over 17 days, and she carried her dead calf over 1,000 miles, which is truly impressive, and it's sort of making us all rethink the way that we think and feel, quite frankly, about killer whales right now. The next time that you will have the opportunity to get involved and to speak out for the protection of our southern resident killer whales is on August 28th at the Swinomish Casino. The Inslee Task Force on Recovery of our southern residents is happening that day, and it will be the last meeting before they put together their draft report. So as far as I understand right now, no agenda has been released, but what they will be trying to do is whittle down their list of potential actions, which is quite large right now, and get those into a draft in October, and then there'll be one more final meeting after that to comment on the draft. There will be the opportunity for public comment on August 28th. It will be very short, probably 1 minute is my guess, although stay tuned. It is really important, and I know this is on a Tuesday, but it is important for the public to go and make sure that their voices are heard. If you are unable to go, you can also go up on the website, and I'll include a link here in the show notes for a link to submit your comments to the task force. And stay tuned with more updates on how you can get involved with both advocating for our southern resident killer whales and volunteering with Whale Scout at volunteer events. We will have a very, very packed fall full of restoration events in the Puget Sound area. And now, without further ado, I'd like to introduce Dr. Hendrik Nolens. Welcome back to the Whale Scout Podcast, everyone. We are now joined by Dr. Hendrik Nolens. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. And so you are a veterinarian at SeaWorld. Can you talk a little bit more about your background?
Yeah, sure. I am, like I said, I'm a veterinarian at SeaWorld. Obviously, that means I'm a veterinarian. I also actually have a training, a degree in marine biology. And for some time, I did a doctorate in infectious diseases of marine mammals. So I was a research professor in marine mammal health at the University of Florida, which is actually very relevant to this case, it turns out. And I'm currently the head veterinarian for the SeaWorld Parks, where I oversee the animal health and animal welfare programs.
And in your experience, have you also worked with wild whales?
Over the years, I've been a participant in the marine mammal stranding networks in the places I've resided in Belgium and New Zealand and the United States. As part of the stranding network, we respond to dead or dying, a lot of times whales on the beach or in shallow waters. I'm currently also a member of a small task force that is tasked to figure out how to sedate, how to tranquilize entangled large whales, specifically North Atlantic right whales, that are still free swimming, as an attempt to make disentanglements, removal of the fishing gear, safer for both humans and the whale. And then, of course, over the years, I've been lucky to be able to enjoy wild whales on my travels along the way.
And right now, you're involved with the effort to help J50, also known as Scarlet, who is looking to be in pretty bad shape. How did you get involved with that effort?
The looking back, or in hindsight, this effort all started about 3 years ago. 3 years ago, there was National Marine Fisheries organized a wild killer whale health assessment workshop because this population of killer whales, the southern resident killer whales in the Pacific Northwest, has been declining in numbers. You know, the population is in trouble. And I was a 3 years ago, I was an invited speaker to that workshop to just talk about, you know, how do we assess health in killer whales that we have easy access to, you know, that are trained to cooperate under healthcare. So even though a lot of the things probably don't apply, we can to in the wild, a lot of the knowledge gains is the same. And it is actually a subgroup of members that, well, meetings have happened since then, but and it's a subgroup of members of that workshop attendees who's now teaming up to respond J50.
So have you been out on the water working with and assessing J50?
No, not personally. I have been up there for a few days. The days I was up there, they were either offshore or it's foggy. It's access to the animals is very intermittent. And we have four veterinarians who have received an emergency permit to approach her to get closer than people who are, otherwise are allowed to even just assess her health, assess her condition. Two of the four have actually had the opportunity to do so far. Personally, I have not.
So I assume that the four of you then are working together and are talking fairly consistently. What can you tell us about how J50 is looking now?
Well, J50 is she's a three or just under 4 year old female killer whale. She's very thin. She's also very valuable to this population because of her reproductive potential still in a declining population. She's very thin based on some aerial photogrammetry assessment, some length measurements. I estimate her to be, or we estimate her to be, about 20% underweight, so having experienced 20% weight loss, which is extensive. She's in very poor body condition and may not survive without help. So I'd say she has a very poor, very guarded prognosis.
And so far in this operation, antibiotics have been administered. However, we don't really have a firm diagnosis. Is this something that's a standard procedure that happens with whales in captivity? Is this different because she's a wild whale? And what are the risks and what are the benefits with doing things in this way?
So there always are challenges in diagnosing a large animal like a whale, even in at a facility at SeaWorld where we have access, frequent access, logistics facilities to be able to approach the whale and so on. So even then, it can be challenging to come to a firm, definitive diagnosis. And of course, as you're alluding to, there's even bigger challenges trying to diagnose a free-swimming whale, right? Pair that with how little we actually know about disease incidence in southern resident killer whales, it becomes a big challenge. It's a big task. The reason we know so little about these killer whales is that whales, once they die, sink and they disappear. You know, a lot of times the bodies, the carcasses, are not recovered for necropsies and follow-up lab testing. So we're doing a lot of extrapolating from knowledge gained from whales at SeaWorld and at other zoological facilities. The main illnesses we're sort of concerned about with her is malnourishment that may be predisposing her to secondary infection. The reason we came to that one is that this whole population seems to be under nutritional stress due to lack of Chinook salmon. So that is high on our, you know, on our differential diagnosis list. Parasitism has also sort of come to the surface because we have found some evidence of presence of parasites in her, or at least in her pod. Because of how young she is, she may also have more profound sort of underlying issues that could be congenital. Or there may be something very different going on altogether. It really is a challenging task to diagnose what is wrong with her while she's free swimming.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, and I kind of want to clarify what you're saying, is that perhaps she went through a period of nutritional stress, and then something else like a parasite could have compounded that issue and then gotten her into this really poor condition. Am I following you correctly? And in fact, there has been some evidence that she may, in fact, have a parasite. And how would that be treated?
You're understanding me correctly. We do know that the food availability, the traditional food item for them is Chinook salmon, and there is fewer and fewer Chinook available to them. We see that in her entire pod. Her entire pod is actually leaner than it has it historically has been. And yes, we actually did. One of the fecal samples was sent down to us here at SeaWorld San Diego and ran in our diagnostic lab, and we did find roundworms. We did find GI parasites, and that was later confirmed in an external lab as well. Now that doesn't necessarily that's not necessarily abnormal for a wild animal, right? Out in the wild, animals do have parasites. It could be a combination of those things that is sort of tipping her over the edge, or again, there may be something else going on. We do know that a malnourished whale, a whale in poor body condition, becomes susceptible to all sorts of secondary bacterial, possibly even fungal infections. So we're trying to do some targeted sampling to rule out or to rule in a few of those things. And fecal samples or some of those samples blow, the exhalate, the vapor that the whales exhale when they breathe out has been collected, and we're analyzing all those samples.
And how might a fungal infection or a parasite be treated? I understand that the antibiotic was given by a dart. Are those two things that would need to be treated with like an oral medication?
That was the initial hope, right? The initial hope was that assuming that J50 Scarlet still has an appetite left, because at some point when a whale gets sick enough, they lose appetite. But assuming that she still has an appetite left, that she's still eating, that she's still foraging, we wanted to give her some oral medications. We did a trial to test at least the broader team. This is not myself. Did a trial to deliver some live Chinook salmon to her in front of her without inadvertently imprinting her on humans. And the test was inconclusive. The conditions up there, we had a drone overhead to see if she would take the fish, and basically we had no meaningful observations. If anything, we think she did not take the fish. That test has since been suspended for because of the initial lack of success, but then also because of some logistical and technical reasons. If we can't deliver the medications orally, we have to do, we are now resorting to what would be done with a terrestrial wild animal, is delivering it via dart, so a remote delivery system. This is very challenging. It has proven to be very challenging to do with her. They are fast moving. As a shooter, you're sitting at the bow on the bow of a rocking, fast moving boat, and they only breach the surface for a little while, and then you have to aim for a safe spot, which is the musculature on the back of the whale. We've been partially successful one time, which is about a week ago, but and like you mentioned, that dart contained an antibiotic, and so now we're coming up on the window where we need to redose that medication. Next time she comes inshore within reach of the response team, we will be attempting to dart her with a second round of antibiotic again. Should we get an opportunity to treat her with two darts, with two medications, we would actually follow it up with a dewormer, with an antiparasitic, because we do now have a good suspicion that she has some GI parasites. And even if they are not the primary cause of her problem, she will still benefit. She'll still recover faster if we can help her at least clear that parasite burden for a little while and help preserve some calories that way.
So the procedure would involve two pokes, an antibiotic and then the dewormer. You can't combine them into one poke?
No, yeah. We can't. Not all the medications mix. You also get a larger volume. Even we suspect that she only got a partial dose last time. So it comes down to logistical challenges. How much you can fit in a dart that we can deliver via a dart gun, air pressure dart gun.
And how
would be two darts, two shots, yeah.
Right, and then two opportunities, and in theory, twice as long trying to get those opportunities. How are you assessing sort of the risks and the benefits of being close to this animal and trying to treat the animal and not stress out her or the rest of her pod?
Yeah, that is something we have to be very mindful of in the entire operation. The impact on her individually, and then also the impact on the surrounding whales, because she is still traveling with her family. She does intermittently lag behind her family for up to a kilometer, so a considerable distance. So those sometimes present windows of opportunity. But we're trying to figure out what exactly is wrong with her, as we're trying to diagnose her problem, observations are important, right? We anything that we can learn about whether she's actually foraging and eating, whether she's defecating normally, her activity, her swim speed. Vocalizations, you know, is she still producing sounds? Can she produce sounds? Proximity to mom, those are things that are all important. And so we have to be within the vicinity somehow without actually impacting her. We can do some of that if our boat follows, but we are actually also using drone technology to fly over her, fly over the pod, and the whales completely ignore a drone, at least when you maintain a certain altitude, and the quality of observations we've been getting from those drones are really tremendous. Now that said, there's no doubt that if you approach her for a dart, there is a response. You know, the boat is closed, she feels it. But like I said, so far that's been one time a week ago, and we are coming into the window here where we'll have to repeat that. The reality of it is that this animal really does look like if we don't do anything, she will not survive. So this is where we're trying to minimize the impact while still trying to help her and approaching her once every 7 to 10 days seems to be, is a balance.
Right. In your mind, what would a successful operation like this look like? And when do you expect, should these next injections happen, when do you expect her to start looking better?
It would take a while. Obviously, a success would be J50 not only survives, but then goes on to have 4 or 5 calves of her own, which would be, which is what this population of killer whales so direly needs. But if you, if you sort of look at it from a operational or a longer, bigger picture, longer term point of view, I actually feel we've already booked some successes. 3 years ago, we started a conversation on these population level health assessments, very big picture. And from there, we built a team of government, national marine fisheries, nonprofits, university, the native tribes, zoological institutions like SeaWorld and the Vancouver Aquarium. And this team is now responding to J50 specifically today and just providing medical care or attempting to provide medical care to a free swimming killer whale has never been permitted or done before. Clearly I think it's something amazing that we're even just trying that. And in our lifetimes the Yangtze River dolphin has gone extinct, and the efforts to save or recover the 12 or so remaining vaquita have fallen short. So J50 may well not make it, but at least this whole team is now united in their commitment to help the southern resident killer whales. And together, I hope we can pull it off. And that would be a success story, too.
So you mentioned the vaquita, where recent efforts have considered and have attempted to bring whales into some sort of net pen. And there have been groups that have been vocal about J50 and their concerns over potentially capturing and treating her. Have any of these sorts of options been discussed?
No, that is currently not in the plan. The initial plan was try to deliver medications via food. The current plan is try to deliver medications via DART. We've been successful at that once, so we feel there's room for improvement, but we're improving some of our approaches and angles and even some of the gear that's being used. All these decisions are entirely NIMFS decisions, and of course, they too have to evaluate and reevaluate their decision as they get more data and observations, just like the veterinarians do.
Where do we go in the future? Let's say that this is a successful operation. How does this look when you look at the big picture?
I think if we can get J50 to make it through this and then have her have offspring of her own, that is a success, and it is a big picture success, right?
Mm-hmm.
The success is not just keeping one animal alive, but then actually to get it to reproduce and contribute to a dwindling population is part of the big picture. Ultimately, though, you know, the question of why the southern resident killer whale population is declining in numbers needs to be answered, and or it needs to have more clarity, some more certainty. And the leading hypotheses are nutritional limitations, so the Chinook salmon populations, which are have been decimated, at least in the times of the year where they heavily rely on them. This is due to human impact. Second big hypothesis is that the pollutants, PCBs, have built up in the food chain, and that they are affecting the, and then pollutants are like fat, and so they actually get dumped into the milk when a mom starts to produce milk, and so now you have these young calves who are receiving all these pollutants, all these are organochlorines via the milk. That's an important theory that needs to be investigated further. There's some thoughts on human impact. You know, this is, some people call the southern resident killer whales an urban whale because they live in such close proximity to you know, human habitat around the San Juan Islands and Seattle, Vancouver. Impact of human activity, boating, noise, all those things need to be clarified. That is what the population needs, more so than what J50 needs right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to thank you so much for your dedication for J50 and our southern residents and helping bring them back to health. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know?
No, you know, just keep making responsible decisions and ask your people around and above us to do the same.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. Thanks.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for listening, everybody. If you like this podcast, go up to our website, whalescout.org, or head over to iTunes, and you will see a whole list of other podcasts that we have put together. And you can subscribe on iTunes and have these sent right to your phone. You can listen on the road, at the gym, wherever you go. And if you have questions or topics that you would like to suggest, please email podcast@whalescout.org. Thank you very much. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to the Whale Scout podcast. Your voluntary donation goes toward the recovery of whale species and enhanced whale watching opportunities in the Pacific Northwest. Please visit www.whalescout.org for more information.